Welcome to the Your Gateway to Wealth and Fulfillment podcast. I'm Andrew Kittleson, joined by my team member, Gordon Semenuk. We are financial advisors with Gateway Wealth Management at UBS. Located in Charlotte, North Carolina, we can be reached at 704-362-8260. Our guest today is Harry Schrader of Schrader Design. He is not affiliated with UBS, and his views are his own.
Well, Harry, really appreciate you joining us today for the podcast. You and I have known each other a long time, like 30 years plus, right?
Yeah.
And why don't we start just by, I always ask everybody this, where are you from? Where'd you go to school? I've joked around that you're the architect for the rich and famous, building beautiful homes here in Charlotte, Lake Norman, even outside of the state. Not to disclose any of your client names, but I'm sure many of our listeners would recognize a lot of those names. And if they don't, they're often people who have sold businesses and just can afford these big, beautiful homes, and they want it to be special. Because I've been in a few of your houses that you've designed, and they are just beautiful, and they're very unique. They have your own touch on it, and they're really something to see. So let's start by just telling us where you're from, where you went to school, a little bit about background, about how you got into the business, and how you got to Charlotte.
Sure. Sounds great. First, I appreciate you guys having me here, and I look forward to a conversation on what has been a very fortunate career. So I have always wanted to be an architect from the day I could draw a sketch. And so my path has been very one-directional since that age. I grew up in New York. I grew up around some really beautiful architecture and was constantly putting myself in positions to be involved as a summer laborer on construction sites, working in architecture offices as a teenager, designed my first projects before I was even out of high school. And so, man, I knew that's where I was headed professionally. And I went to the University of Notre Dame for architecture school and had an amazing job upon graduation, went back to New York, and was right in the thick of very high-end custom architecture from the get-go. But my then fiance and now wife and I felt like we needed to try something different. We needed to make a change. And so I walked away from a great job and we relocated to Charlotte almost on a whim.
When was that?
That was in 1991. I think I met you in 1991 on the basketball court. And I began this journey in a city that I never would have imagined would provide for me the professional and personal opportunities that I've had.
And so you, at that point, you worked for a local architectural firm as an employee.
Yeah.
And I guess where I want to go next is you had worked there a while. How long had you worked there before you were thinking about moving on your own?
So I worked at two architecture firms through most of the 90s here in Charlotte. And it was very interesting because as I've said to lots of young people over the years, as I've taught and I've parented, is sometimes learning what you don't want to do is as important as what you end up doing. And so I worked at architecture firms that taught me a lot about focusing my attention both entrepreneurially and creatively. And so that was almost 10 years of doing that. In 1999, I broke off and started my own firm.
Right. I remember that because I recall you and I had lunch one day and I had no idea you were thinking about that. And you had mentioned to me, ask what I thought about it. Not that I had anything to do with it, but I remember having seen your work wholeheartedly saying 100%, yes, go on your own. Your clients love you. I've seen this stuff. I don't see any way you won't be very successful doing that. So a lot of entrepreneurs, I think, had that in common where they were working in the business for someone else and envisioned things where they own their own business. They were their own boss, calling their own shots, doing it their way. And I'm curious what your mindset was and some of the hesitation you might have had or worries and some of the excitement you had about it. Maybe just tell us how you thought about things then and what propelled you to make the move.
Sure. The timing of that question and me having this opportunity is prophetic because there was a moment that prompted this launch for Schrader Design, and it revolved around a client that existed in the firm I was working for. And I was seeing them struggle in the format of the firm I was working with. It was a significant opportunity. And I thought the world of these people. And I mustered up my courage. I was about to have my first child, or my wife was. And I said, I think this is the moment where we should consider this pivot. And I went and spoke to those folks with a lot of anxiousness that they would say, heck no, why would we possibly put our faith in you? And they did.
How old were you?
I was 30.
Okay.
I'm guessing somewhere in that range. And I will never forget it. And I've recounted the story hundreds of times because their faith in me is what propelled the formation of the firm. The coincidence of that timing is that that gentleman just passed away this past month. And I couldn't be more thankful for that launch, for that faith, for that. I mean, that's a whole nother story of mentorship that fueled my fire. It fueled my fire creatively. It fueled my fire entrepreneurially at a moment where I was just taking this leap of faith, and it just bolstered it. And it is one of the projects you've probably visited with me, which is a dream project for any architect at any point in their career. And I got it as project number one for the firm. And we just hit 27 years, you know, reflecting on that is pretty powerful.
Amazing. And congratulations. I mean, 27 years in business is quite an accomplishment. So that was your first client. How'd you go from project number one to project number two?
Yeah.
And did your excitement, nervousness change at all after getting that first one under your belt?
I think what is so significant about the opportunity that project one provided me was it established a creative vision for the company. It established a trust-based dialogue with a client that I recognized worked. And therefore, I never would depart from that exact philosophy. And the credibility that comes with a project of that scope. And by scope, I mean, we're talking about a house that's 15,000 square feet on an incredible piece of property that is in the neighborhood of $20 million project. That's project number one. That's pretty insane. And I consider myself so fortunate for that. I don't think I deserved it. I think I just lucked upon it. And then I threw 100% of myself at making it the best effort. To answer your question, project two literally propels me forward in the same philosophy. And that happened within 6 months. Project three was 4 months after that. And the next thing you know, I'm in the game. And I've spent all 27 years after that staying in the game, making sure that everything I do is in that realm of commitment.
I want to take a second to pivot a little bit into another question. Your office is right in the heart of South End. And I went up there last Sunday night for dinner. And I wasn't driving, so I kind of got to look around more than I normally would. There are, I don't know if they call them skyscrapers, but very large buildings. I remember when you and I used to go to Fat Burrito, which at one story tied it for the tallest building there. It's unbelievable. So talk a little bit about how, maybe not just Charlotte in general, but South End particularly, because you've had your, you've been on the pulse of that growth in one way or another for almost the whole time you've been in town. Talk to us a little bit about South End, what's happened, what it looks like going forward, if you can.
Yeah, agree that it is almost unrecognizable from the days that I started working there when you couldn't find a safe place to get a cup of coffee, much less live, work, and play in this district. And I'm proud of the fact that I did play a small part in that in terms of not only being an investor in real estate in South End, but also being part of a series of rehabilitation projects of old warehouses that are now these thriving destinations. South End is become an epicenter. And I laugh all the time about this because it used to be my neighborhood. Now it's my kid's neighborhood. And I'm the old guy that needs to hit the road at 5 p.m. when all the young folks are on the rail trail. And I love that because it's recognizing the growth of Charlotte. And I think to make a bigger statement about having been a part or a witness to it, is I never could have imagined that Charlotte would afford architects like me the opportunity to have consistent business growth and a list of clients that have sustained me for as long as they have. There's no disputing the physical growth of Charlotte, but also the architectural growth, the maturity of clients that want this very sophisticated brand of architecture, and it's fit us perfectly.
That's great. Tell us a little bit about kind of your brand of architecture. How do you sort of put your stamp on it, yet maintain that timeless feel?
Sure. Yeah. This is not a glib statement. We start every project from a blank piece of paper. That's the origin of every design decision we make, is to consider the sentiment of authenticity and uniqueness from day one with our clients. And what I think is a significant personality trait of our firm, and by the way, it's not just me. I have a firm of very talented folks, and we can talk as much or as little as what the technology of architecture means to us as a custom architecture firm. But what we are committed to is to make sure that our work is a reflection of the client's taste, not our direct interpretation of what is good looking and not good looking. And as a result, our portfolio, I think, is as diverse as anybody's. And what that means, you know, in simple terms, is style and timelessness crosses lots of architectural genre, lots of descriptives that go from traditional American architecture to more contemporary interpretations of it. We just love when we're given the latitude to play in that sandbox, right? To basically be entrusted with a client's early vision, but also to coach them to decisions that are going to lead them to what I hope is beautiful places to spend their lives.
Do you ever turn down businesses or clients because you can see that it won't work? Or even if it looks kind of lucrative, it's like where you don't maybe agree at all, or there's some other obstacle?
Yeah, I would say that it is a strong priority in the beginning stages of an interview process for me to feel out clients as much as they're feeling out me, because it's a multi-year relationship. And I know the horror stories you hear about building projects and houses, and it was the most stressful time, and when is it going to be done? But I firmly believe that if you align at the beginning with a vision and a process, it's a wholly different experience that is filled with a lot of good times and a lot of creative energy that is well received by clients and a lot of friendship building principles. And to that end, one of the greatest gifts I've ever been given is the fact that my client base have almost exclusively become my friend base. That means so much to me. It really does. It means that those two-year chunks of time are spent with people who are like-minded, who believe in me, and I in turn want to advocate for their dreams and wishes for the project.
So it really is a fulfillment and enjoyment getting to that level of a relationship with the client you work with. And it sounds like it's really almost a creative collaboration. You're not going in there with any preset really thoughts, kind of hear them out first, if I'm listening to you correctly, and then build the design from there.
I think you nailed it. I think there are some misconceptions that an architect is a means to an end. And I respectfully disagree with folks who might think that's the case. But when a lion's share of homes in this market and in other markets are built where get the drawings done as fast as you can and move on, that is very different than engaging with a client who is aspiring to go through a fully immersive project cycle. And I think where that's going to take us is, and where it has taken us as a firm, is to being able to show prospect clients, this is what we do, and this is where we take a project. This is the outcome. Are you interested in jumping on that ride with us? And how well we communicate that is how well we know if it's the right fit and collaboration that you just described.
Do you have a favorite project you've ever done? Or is there a horror story you'd like to share?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I would say it is really difficult, given the blessings I've had in my career, to establish a favorite project. I consider myself and my team really fortunate to spend most of their time, most of our days, in this weird place between task at hand and passionate pursuit. And, you know, as I've said to my own kids, you have to find what brings you joy and brings you the best creative version of yourself, regardless of industry. I just happen to be in one that requires a pencil in my hand. But the idea of pursuing something that brings you great joy makes the business side of it almost subordinate to the time that you spend. And the relevance of that statement is, when you're committed to that, then almost everything I have ever worked on is a favorite. It's how fortunate to spend your time year after year on stuff that brings you great reward. It all starts with the clients that give you the latitude to design really cool stuff. That being said, our next house is our best house. And as long as that's in my mind and in my mindset, then I'm going to keep doing what I do.
You don't work just in around here. You have, what's the furthest away you've had projects?
Did you go to Mexico?
I did. Yeah, I did. I feel like when given the opportunity, of which several of those have come up in recent years, and I don't know, part of it is repeat clients. Part of it is very successful people wanting to do work in other markets. Part of it is planting a flag through coincidence, and the next thing you know, someone latches onto you and thinks, man, you're the right guy for us. I think it's led us to really cool places. So we've done a beautiful home on the side of the mountain in Telluride, Colorado. And the thought of being in the middle of this field and looking at God's creation and saying, well, how am I given this canvas to do a house? It's just mind-blowing to me, but turned out to be an amazing project. I'll rank that one up there as one of my favorites, because literally all I got to do is frame the views and I'm halfway home, right? We're doing a significant project in Kiowa right now that's got to be one of the most fulfilling, passionate projects we've been involved in, and that's right on the beach in Kiowa. We are working in Florida. We've done projects in multiple states.
Sounds great. I noticed you sidestepped the horror story question.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe you got, I'm guessing maybe you get halfway through a project, it's not working, but it's too late to pull out anything that comes to mind. It sounds, yeah. It all sounds so, you make it sound easy. And obviously, you've been very successful, but I always like to know if there's something in there that gnaws at you like that.
Fair point. I'll answer it this way. Every complicated house, of which most of our work is complicated, revolves around a successful pairing of client and vision, a client and trust, client and dollars, and architect, and then ultimately the contractor. And by contractor, I don't mean the one guy that I meet on the project site in the morning. I mean the hundreds of people that are required to pull off really great design. Drawing it on paper gets us halfway there. We really need that talented crew to get to a finish line. And with that comes lots of complexity and lots of hurdles and lots of resolutions. And so when you ask that kind of question, it almost doesn't relate to one project. It relates to the biggest challenges that exist in being able to execute our architecture and see it come to life, right?
Does something stick out as sort of the biggest challenge you had, whether it was on the side of the mountain in Telluride or?
Yeah.
There's probably a lot of them when you're dealing with your complexity. And
yeah, there are so many. There's so many moments in construction that you look for those milestones. Like, hey, that crazy piece of steel that has to, A, get delivered to the site on some massive truck, B, show up and get lifted into place by a crane, cantilevering to pick up a glass load. Like, there's all that happens constantly. The one in Kiowa has a entire curtain wall of glass imported from Portugal. Man, that is a cross fingers moment when you're installing a curtain wall of glass that just came across the ocean.
How much would that cost?
Give us an idea.
Gosh.
Piece of glass.
Yeah, I mean, the window order on that project is well over $1 million.
For just the windows?
Just the windows, yeah. And the...
Good to know.
The windows are important.
Good to know, Andrew.
Yeah.
Well, and any future building we're going to do.
I'll say one last thing on the subject of my worst experiences. In my world, the worst experiences are when you draw a house for a client and it doesn't get built. And those are very sad moments for me because there is nothing worse than committing passionate pursuit on behalf of a client and it never makes it out of the drawer. And there's a lot of reasons why that happens. And it's always disappointing.
I guess anybody who runs a business can understand that, right? I mean, you've got those hurdles and projects that just don't get done. And that's just a part of being in the game.
Yeah, for sure.
I would imagine. What you touched on, technology, which is rapidly changing all of our industries. How do you use technology? How do you see that, if you can even imagine it, changing the world of architecture?
Well, that's happened already without even getting to the AI discussion. So I'm old enough to have gone through Notre Dame Architecture School without a computer. And with that came the core competency of being able to communicate your ideas with a pencil. And I draw by hand to this day and will continue to draw throughout the remaining of my career.
I'd love to hear that.
Yeah. It is the foundational communication skill that I've developed. That being said, I don't do this alone, and I rely so heavily on a team of very talented people who, for the most part, are younger than me and therefore have had direct exposure to the technology of the industry, which is where computers come in and where the computer is their sketchbook, where the computer is their wingman for executing ideas. And so we've embraced that fully. And I have an office full of firepower because of that. And the tangible outcome from that technology is our ability to communicate even more clearly to a client through 3D renderings and sun angles on pools and overhangs. And when you're designing resort style architecture on the shores of the ocean or on Lake Norman, we want to know where the sun is baking you and where the sun is shaded. And so our architecture is responsive to that. And the technology of the computer and that software programming gives us access to all that. I spent a lot of my day over the shoulder of the crew who are each working to flush out those things in the computer. And the software commitment we make and the upgrades to that software are Chinese to me, quite frankly, but I know we need them and I commit to them. The last point on the technology side, so AI is breathing down our neck and anybody can speak into the phone and 30 seconds later have a 5,000 square foot modern beach house rendering spit out. And that's all a novelty to some degree, and that none of that is directly translatable to replacing our industry, but it is something that I can either, and have, by the way, started with a perspective like, when AI tells me I'm done, then I'll walk away and I'm done. That was a pretty closed-minded initial reaction. I'm 58, I'm not ready to hang it up, but I feel like I need to be respectful to what it is doing to the industry and will do to the industry. And so I've spent a lot of time thinking about and coaching the staff to the idea that let's embrace that technology and let's use it as all these other industries are to find the middle ground between being scared to death of it and recognizing that it can help with making us better at our jobs.
Can't believe you're 58. You're doing a good job there. So you have a lot of runway left. But do you start at this point? You've got more in the rearview mirror than looking out the windshield in terms of your career. You're building beautiful properties that are going to last for decades. Do you think about your legacy at all and the legacy of your work and your design? Not yet.
I would tell you, I've always viewed legacy as a live daily dynamic. Like reflecting on legacy is less important to me than living my legacy right now. And what I mean by that is, to suggest this with humility, is just be the best version of yourself. Go after this work with a ferocious attitude of creative interest and commitment to your clients. And at the same time, be good to people, be a good dad, be a good husband. And that's the legacy. I never have done this for awards. I've never done it for a bust in a museum somewhere, you know, and I mean that jokingly, but I do it because the reward is instantaneous as each project moves through my life.
Fantastic. We really appreciate you coming in today. This has been an amazing conversation. I think very interesting. A lot of people will find it to be so. If someone wanted to look at your work and what you're doing and the cool stuff that you're creating, where would they go to do that? What's your website?
So, recognizing my comment previously about not being a technology guy, yes, the website has a bunch of images on there. SchraderDesign.com.
S-C-H-R-A-D-E-R.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Yeah.
I laugh because I know it's five projects behind, right? We're so busy working on the next awesome thing that we're not reliant on the website to be this, you know, up-to-date thing. And it will get there eventually. And it's full of really cool projects, I'd like to believe. We're fortunate to be in a business where our business card is the project, right? So when people are like, wow, where's your job sign? What's going on with your marketing? My marketing is the work. My marketing is the clients who invite friends over to these houses and they end up becoming our next project. So it's really served us very, very well.
Nice. All right. Well, if there's anything else you'd like to share, we'd love to hear it. But otherwise, this has been a great conversation and appreciate your contribution to our community in Charlotte and beyond and all the beautiful work you're doing. Thanks so much for coming in and talking to us today, Harry.
Thanks, Harry.
Yeah, appreciate you guys very much. Have a good day.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.
This podcast was edited by Resonate Recordings.